Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Health IT for Care Continuum Task Force. We will get started here shortly. Of the members, we have Carolyn Peterson, Chris Lehman, our co-chairs, and Sue Cressley. Hopefully the others will be able to join us soon. We have a full agenda today. First, we'll have a few opening remarks, and we will hear from our HHS colleagues at CDC around immunizations, and then followed by DS4P, and then a recap of our draft discussions, continuation from yesterday's full high-tech call. So with that, I will turn it over to Carolyn and Chris for a few remarks.
Good morning. We want to thank everyone for coming again to our early morning Friday meetings. We're really pleased to have our guests from the Center for Disease Control with us this morning to do a presentation on immunization. And then we will have some good discussion about some of the comments we've received from the fall HITAC and discuss a little bit about where we go from here in preparing our transmittal letter. So with that, welcome, and I'll pass the mic to Chris.
Thank you, Carolyn. I appreciate this committee coming together to work on the tasks that were given to us, including the pediatric certification. And, you know, I just wanted to remind us why what we're doing really matters. When it comes to electronic health records and use in pediatrics, safety is a paramount concern. I was reminded yesterday of a study of 9,000 pediatric safety events in hospitals in a 5-year period, where 1 in 3 of the errors were related to EHR usability. The work that we're doing here will drastically, hopefully, improve the usability of EHRs used in children, and with it, hopefully, will reduce errors and the risk to children. So this is important, valuable work, and I appreciate all the feedback and input we have received. And I'll turn it back over to ONC.
Great. Hi, so this is Sam. I'm Samantha Meckler with the Office of Policy. I want to thank our chairs for their dedication and leadership and all the task force members. As we mentioned just moments ago, we're delighted we have colleagues from the CDC available today to present to us. As folks may recall, in earlier calls, it was identified that it would be helpful to learn more of the relevant activities that the CDC is engaging with as aligns with the ONC Pediatric Health IT recommendation focused on immunizations. So with that, I'd like to pass the baton to our colleague in the CDC, Stuart. Thank you again to you and your colleagues for your collaboration support and for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for letting me speak. I've got a lot of slides, but hopefully we can get through them quickly because I do want to have enough time for any questions or discussion. So can you see my slides? Hopefully?
Yes, we can.
Okay, good. So I just wanted to give an overview of some of the activities that we are engaging in along with our partners to help with some of the issues that have been discussed within your group. So this is just kind of the high-level agenda to just focus a little bit on some of the work we're doing within the EHR space as well as within the IIS space around standardization and reducing variability, and then some just specific things that have come up around the school certificate and also some of the activities that we are planning for the future. So this is kind of just a visual representation of some of the focus areas for today. So the first topic is some of the work that we're doing with IIS EHR integration. So back in 2013, Gartner conducted a feasibility study to investigate the feasibility of doing certification to help with integrating EHR and IIS and making sure that there was interoperability. So CDC brought experts and stakeholders together to identify capabilities that would improve clinical workflows related specifically to immunization to help with data sharing between providers and IIS. That resulted in what we have dubbed the Immunization Integration Program, or IIP. And so IIP is operated by HIMSS in collaboration with CDC with a contract that we have with Chickasaw. And the goals really are to improve those clinical workflows related specifically to immunization and also improve the information sharing between the IIS and providers, focusing on those workflows. So the two ways of doing that, first, we established a voluntary testing and recognition program for EHRs focused on those clinical workflows. And then also, something I'll be talking about in a second, we also established an immunization collaborative recently, convened by HIMSS and working with ARA, the American Immunization Registry Association, to kind of operationalize some of the work that has come out of IIP. And this goes along with some parallel efforts that we have been doing to try to improve IIS information sharing and also improve the onboarding process. This just kind of gives an overview. There are 25 EHR capabilities that are tested in the program, and I've included a subset that address some of the issues that were identified by the task force. And so through the testing and recognition program so far, six products have been developed by five software vendors that have achieved recognition so far, one of them being Cerner. A number of other software developers and products are in the queue for testing as well. And this program is recognized by ONC as a testing partner for 2015 certification for the Transmission to Immunization Registries. So any vendor that goes through this process will then be recognized officially through ONC. And so the Immunization Collaborative I mentioned earlier, as I said, is really a way to kind of operationalize some of this work. So while IIP was focused mostly on just testing and certification, the collaborative is really trying to work to resolve some of the issues that have surfaced during that testing process. And so things like vendor-specific connection issues with IIS, and then just common interoperability challenges that were discovered across EHRs and IIS. So while we were informally trying to mitigate some of these issues during the testing process, the collaborative is really a way to formalize the process and try to work together with the EHR and IIS communities to come to a common solution. And as I said, the collaborative was convened between HIMSS and ARA, and the goals really are try to identify and prioritize those challenges that were discovered related to the immunization workflows that were tested, and then develop and support actions to address these challenges. So along with working with the EHR community, obviously CDC is very focused on the IIS community as well. And so one of our main ways of assuring interoperability is encouraging broad adoption of the standards that we have developed, like the HL7 implementation guide, our transport recommendation, as well as our clinical decision support, CDSI. And so development and refinement of these standards is occurring collaboratively between CDC, the IIS community, EHRs, and standards organizations. And one of the drivers of adopting these standards within the EHR community was obviously the 2015 CHRT. And then on the IIS side, trying to meet the needs of the end users working within the incentive program. And so it kind of was a two-way street with the adoption of 2015. And then simultaneously, as I mentioned before, we have established the IIP for testing on the EHR side. But on the IIS side, we are also working to measure and improve and make sure that there is standardization across the community. So a little bit about the work that we're doing in that area. Similarly to IIP, within IIS, we are trying to measure compliance with our standards and improve standardization across IIS. ERA and CDC are working together to provide testing tools and roll it out within the community and actually do the testing, look at the results, and try to work with the community to make sure that everybody is implementing the standards correctly. So we have a collaboration with NIST to develop our testing tools. And those tools are focused on testing the messaging, transport, evaluation, forecast, and data quality. And ERA is actually operationalizing that testing by working with the community to make sure that the tools are being used and gather the results. And so this is kind of showing the stages of the work that we're doing around the testing. So transport and messaging are actually already in the validation stage. Clinical decision support is currently in the assessment stage. And then data quality is in the early stages of development. And then we have other future goals as well, as you can see. So the results so far of this activity is that we're seeing very good adoption within the community of the transport standard, HL7, query response, as well as submission. You can see there has been an increase since we started evaluating, and 80% of IIS being tested. So we're seeing solid gains in the adoption of transport and HL7, and we're hoping to see great results as well within clinical decision support, but that is still in the testing phase. So one of the things we've also discovered is that the vast majority of IIS have query response capability, and that is really a cornerstone to making sure that data can be exchanged properly with an EHR so that the most accurate information is available. So just some success stories around that. Nevada has documented improved timeliness of reporting, fueled by the interoperability standards supported by incentive programs. And in Rhode Island, data has become more complete, and so now school nurses are actually using the IIS almost exclusively to monitor compliance with school immunization requirements. So along with success stories within IIS, we've also received some information from EHRs and providers about how the stronger IIS adoption of standards has led to better access to data within the EHR, ultimately resulting in better clinical information. So just going to put some of these up on the screen. I don't necessarily need to read through all of them, but something that really has come out of all of this is that as standards and interoperability have improved within the IIS. The information available to the EHRs has become better and is being relied upon more. And I think this last one really makes a very strong statement about the query response and the ability to do bidirectionality really influencing how EHRs and providers are able to get immunization data. So another issue that we are trying to tackle is onboarding. Obviously, you can have all the best standards and have the ability to do query response, but if you can't get connected as a provider, then none of that is going to make any difference. So we are working to improve the onboarding process across the community. Obviously, the onboarding process is sometimes lengthy, and that's really often just because IIS have very particular requirements to make sure that there's quality and to make sure that they can manage the workflow properly. But obviously there are areas of improvement, and so last year ERA published a consensus-based recommendation around onboarding, which is available on their website, and it really aligns the steps for onboarding for implementation across IIS. And the focus is to make sure that there is some better standardization, try to streamline the process, reduce the time in the queue as well as the time that it takes once you are in process for onboarding, but also help manage expectations. So helping to make sure there's clear documentation for anyone who is trying to onboard so they know exactly what the process is and what will be involved, and also to provide some testing tools so that the EHR vendor can test their messaging ahead of time so that can reduce some of the issues they may experience once they start onboarding. So really the conclusion of all of the standards work is that all of these activities are improving interoperability, and ultimately that will improve the quality of data within the IIS and what is available to EHR. And that ultimately, of course, also helps with population health needs and the information is available for analysis. And the query response has really helped the EHR community be able to get to that information and lower the burden. But, of course, while there is a lot of improvement happening, there's still more work to be done. And really what our focus is to make sure that we are collaborating between the EHR and IIS communities to make sure that we continue to improve and that that both sides are at the table so that we can make sure that we are addressing everyone's needs. So a couple of other things I just wanted to talk about briefly. I know that the issue of school certificates has come up in discussions. And so just a little bit of an overview of how that world works that we have seen. And so all states require immunizations, obviously, for school entry. Not all states require the same type of vaccines or the number of doses because of variability in state law. And not all states require an official certificate of immunization status, but those that do usually have very different look and feel, and that's all obviously guided by state policy. So what we've seen is that obviously, and I think that you all have said this as well, that EHR should be able to produce a report, but EHR should not necessarily be required to generate a state-specific certificate. And so the report that is going to be produced by the EHR is not necessarily the official record that is needed, that you need to have in a very special format to take to the school or daycare or whatever it's required for to get school entry or to be allowed into the daycare. And so because those all have varying formats that are going to be very state-specific, it probably makes more sense for the IIS to be creating those very state-specific certificates, while the EHR should just be able to spit out a report. And then just some future projects that we're working on that are aligned with a number of the topics I mentioned earlier. We're working with HHS CTO on what has been now dubbed collectively the Immunization Gateway. And that's another way we're trying to lower barriers to connectivity and improve onboarding. The initial focus of it was really on interstate data exchange, but now it has evolved to include federal agencies, independent pharmacies, and smaller provider organizations. And then out of the tools that we were developing with NIST for testing, one of the other things that we are working on is an implementation guide authoring and management tool. And so what the goal of that is to allow creation of local implementation guides for HL7 so that there's more consistency in the creation and maintenance of them. But as a result of that, it will also allow us to look at the delta between states and catalog that clearly. Once everyone starts using the tool, it'll be very easy to see where the differences are within the guides between states. So with that, I think I have given sort of the overview and welcome any questions or comments.
This is Sue Kressley. Thank you so much for that presentation. And I've been involved in some of the efforts in other ways. I have two questions that struck me. Your comment about the IIS producing the state-specific form, how do you envision operationalizing that? Every patient needing to have their own login, there be the schools be able to generate them? I'm trying to figure out where the provider who's really the person getting the request would operationalize that.
So I will also, Rebecca, please jump in around school certificates if I misspeak. But our feeling was that, and this is an evolving thought process, but obviously the IIS being in the state is going to have better idea of what the very state-specific requirements are, and so it would be easier for them to create those. And one of our ideas around that was really that the IIS would be doing the certificate generation, but then allow EHRs to request the state-specific form from the IIS through something like an API, potentially like a FHIR request or something. So, yes, that's obviously something that would be future idea of how to address it, but from workflow perspective, at least, that's kind of what makes sense to us currently.
And Stuart, this is Rebecca. I'll just chime in on the state-specific certificate. So for the states that require a state-specific certificate, their systems today generate that state-specific report from the registry. So schools, childcare providers, the entities that need that certificate have access to the registry to get those reports. So the report I think that the EHR needs to produce in a lot of situations would just inform what needs to be on that certificate. So it'd really be a two-part if for some reason that certificate isn't produced already or there's new information that came in.
Yeah, so the problem as a provider who does this probably hundreds of times a day now that it's like the end of the school and everyone's registering for kindergarten, it's if it's not integrated in the EHR and somebody, I mean, I've been have a bi-directional registry in PA for so long, I don't even have a clue how I would get to the web-based application because it's integrated, but the integration of a form flow is not. And so I can, with a click of a button, push it, pull a report from IEHR that I can even push on the portal for a patient to print out at home. But to me, the better thing seems to think, why can't we hook the schools up with the registers and they print their own? Why don't we take the doctors out of the middle of this? Unless there's gaps in care that are identified with that. So it just seems to be an extra burden to throw the provider in the middle of. And as an EHR vendor, there's no way I have development resources to figure out how to pull an API and pull that report and give it to my users who then need to push it to the families. So I can tell you that won't happen for probably at least 3 years. To me, it just seems like that burden, we're just sort of making a new burden, not eliminating it. So I'd love the opportunity to sort of brainstorm and discuss alternatives. And then the other comment I had was, is there any thought to creating an entrance for providers to report a barrier to IIS integration so that we can track in a way that's, sort of user complaint department, like, my EHR is ready, but the state says that we have to stand behind, we're number 27 in the queue and we can't get to it for 6 months, or my state's ready, but my vendor's not. So that we can sort of help empower the providers to have somewhere to send their ongoing barriers so we can identify and work to chip away at them, both collectively in your aggregated information, but also where the rubber meets the road.
And if I may add to what Sue just said, I understand that this varies significantly from state to state, but I'm kind of interested in hearing from you what the current timelines for onboarding are. I saw you put a lot of effort into improving it, but I would like to have an idea. If I come to an immunization registry right now with web, say I want to be integrated, what are the ranges depending on state or region that is required before I'm really part of this?
So I think as far as the sort of complaint box goes, I think that the consortium would be a logical place to kind of bring up those issues. And because that is really what it's established to do, is to bring the EHR and IIS community to the same table. As far as average onboarding times, I'm not aware of those, but I don't know if anybody else on the call has any anecdotal information around that.
Hey, Stuart, this is Jim. I think Rebecca might as well. And I think a lot of the timing for onboarding really depends on the prioritization. And I know from what I've heard that it's a lot of times it's the adult providers that are not prioritized and are sitting in the queue. But I do think the pediatric providers are generally prioritized and onboarded fairly quickly. But I think we could probably work with ERA to help get you a better answer to that. And as long as I've got the floor, I did want to add one other point to the question about immunization certificates. I know there was a question about, having the patient have access to that as one possibility. And I did want to let you guys know that CDC has another pilot project that they're doing with our office and the Chief Technology Office around getting patients access directly to their data, including the ability to print an immunization certificate. And that's been very successful in two states, Washington and Louisiana. And it was extremely helpful during the measles outbreak. And we had a lot of people signing up during the measles outbreak in Washington.
So from my vendor hat, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. This is Rebecca. I was just going to comment on the provider cues in terms of onboarding. So I think one of the challenges with onboarding is, you know, when the standards are there on the EHR side and on the IIS side, onboarding can be fast, 2 weeks and through the queue. I think the challenge becomes when the systems are off standard, and there are a variety of different ways things can be off standard, just slightly or little variations here that can delay that a little bit longer. As far as the actual queues for each jurisdiction, I don't have those off the top of my head. I know that there are some that are more lengthy than others. I think in general, the resources to try and get folks through the onboarding process have not been adequate over the last several years to meet the demand. I think we're finally getting to the point where we're achieving at least some balance there, but we do know that there are some places where that queue remains longer than we'd like to see it. And just to the question about if you're having problems, particularly with a specific IIS where you're not able to onboard or get through that queue, we would be more than happy to hear about that. This is one of the, I think, the benefits is that we're able to work with all of the jurisdictions. And sometimes there is just a little piece that's off that is, you know, we can have the conversation with them about, hey, this is what we're seeing. These are some of the comments that we've heard from others. Oftentimes that can help maybe move things along a little bit. So we would welcome those concerns.
So this is Sue again, and that'd be awesome if there's a way that there's an email or something we can share that we and some direction on how widely we can publicize that. That would be very helpful for us. I echo your comment about resources. We are also wearing my vendor hat in a situation now where we have functional IIS connections with the old spec. But then we've got to figure out how do we upgrade them and onboard new clients. And some of the IISs are, it's hard to figure out how do we preserve what we have with moving the connections we already have to upgrade it to the new spec, as well as onboard new clients. And it becomes really difficult to manage on both the IIS and the vendor side whenever you change those specs. And you are absolutely right in the sort of off, the one-off, yeah, we like the Social Security number in this state, but no, we want this here, and no, we don't want the CVX at all. We only want the NDC number. That becomes a challenging. The other piece of it is when you talk about the adult versus pediatric space, I think this is also vendor-specific and organization specific. And it totally makes sense. If you're a pediatrician in the middle of Wyoming and you're with a small vendor and there's only two docs in your practice, you take way less priority than a health system that's onboarding a whole lot of people with a vendor that the IIS has already worked with. And so there are some resource limitations, and most people will do where can I impact the most patients first, and that often leaves the most vulnerable practices in the most vulnerable areas who are using smaller vendors and not part of a big health system to get to the last of the queue. And I want us to be mindful of making sure that we're paying attention to that.
Any other comments or questions? All right, well, thank you all, and this has been hopefully informative. It was informative for me. And if you have any other questions, please feel free to reach out to any of us.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Can we cue the next agenda item, please? Great, thank you so much. So this slide is on data segmentation for privacy. This is content that's been shared with the work group previously. As folks recall, last week we heard a great presentation from Dr. Galvin on this standard, and she shared her expertise with us on privacy. We wanted to circle back on the DSRP proposal just to see if there was what we anticipate is consensus from the group, but we wanted to be diligent and robust in establishing that as a concrete recommendation from the task force on the DS4P proposal. So this is part of our charge. Again, the proposal and the notice of proposed rulemaking involves both the API and the, do we have the actual proposal on the slide?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think we have the actual, okay, we can pull that up if folks need to look at that. Alex Conter is also on the line and he can recap or talk through that as well. But what we wanted to do again is our understanding based on the input from the group in the last two calls is that there was support for this proposal, both from the replacement for the granular section document and then also as involves the API proposal. Alex, are you, did you want to take 30 seconds to just state the proposal? That would be helpful for the group. Carolyn, should we do that since we don't have it on a slide?
I think that would be really great, yeah.
Okay. Alex, are you able to just walk through that? I'm not sure. Alex may be not in the speaker box. He may be listed as a participant. Okay, great. And then Al Taylor should also be in the speaker box as a presenter as well.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. So either Al or Alex, if you could just walk through the proposal on the DS4P just in probably 20 or 30 seconds for folks. Apologies, we don't have the slide with us today.
Hi, Sam. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. Apologies, Alex.
Okay, great. No problem. Yeah, so the two proposed DSRP-related criteria include the capability to enable a user to create a summary record tagged as restricted at the document section and entry levels, and for the capability for certified EHR technology to receive a tagged summary record and preserve privacy markings to ensure fidelity to the tags. And then the certification criteria related to APIs is the capability to respond to data requests using the FHIR standard in accordance with the consent to share consent profile or consent implementation guide, as we called it.
Great, thank you so much, Alex. So again, our sense from the discussion was that there seemed to be general support for these proposals in our rule, but we wanted to, again, circle back and invite explicit input to establish that as part of a recommendation from this group going forward if our sense from this discussion is correct.
My sense is that this group is supportive of this. But after the comments yesterday at HITACH, I am not so sure how supportive of it the full HITACH will be. You know, we heard from a small number of people, and sometimes, particularly at the end of a very long, intense meeting, not everyone is as willing to speak up as they might have been a few hours before. But I felt like we heard pretty strongly from some people yesterday that they're not at all in support of any data segmentation. And that seemed a bit strange because I believe that currently there is some capability to do some of that within systems. Perhaps it's not at always within a record, but certainly you can segment some records and exert some controls over things. So I'm wondering kind of how you read that, listening to
this. This is Sue. I'm also interested in, do you have any sense of why? Because to me, without this, interoperability gets stalled.
Right. The comments that were brought up had to do with, I can't do my job as a doctor if I don't have all the information. We could be killing people if we don't know their full history.
Yeah, I think just reading through some of the comments that were sent to me, I wasn't on the meeting, but it clearly there are people who are not willing to trade off the benefits that this brings for the lack of potential data that they might require in order to do their job right.
So to me, the thing that they're, and maybe it's just because I have a skewed viewpoint, when you're working in a big health system, you think that you're seeing things. When I'm sending you things from a different outside the health system, they're already not getting a full picture because I can't send it safely.
You know, and speaking from the patient perspective and from what is somewhat in the literature, if people know that what they tell their doctor isn't going to be confidential with that particular doctor, but that it's going to be there for all sorts of people to see, you know, from nurses to other doctors to business associates and third-party groups that work with the medical information, people will not share things that concern them, whether it's something very simple that the doctor wouldn't care about at all, but maybe it's just, you know, a personal preference of the patient, to things that you might really want to know, like drug use or domestic violence or other kinds of criminal events in the family history. You know, and sometimes there are reasonable reasons for people to not share that stuff. And there is also literature to suggest that sometimes care providers assume more negative views of patients when they see that information in someone's record, you know, kind of coming into the encounter with a predetermined vision that is not necessarily upheld by what's in front of them. Or the patient feels they're being treated in a way that is not respectful or not going to be helpful, and so doesn't seek help when they truly need it. I mean, I can certainly bring that evidence back to future discussions with HITAC. You know, there's a way to do that, to show people, not to just be, I didn't want to bring it up yesterday because I didn't want to create a sense that I'm accusing anyone of anything. When I don't feel that way. It's just a point of evidence in the medical literature.
Another comment to make, Carolyn, is the fact that, you know, nothing stops a provider from actually probing for sensitive information themselves. If there's no information about, let's say, previous pregnancies or sexually transmitted disease, nothing stops the provider from asking for that information. There is no inherent right of having this information served on a platter every single time. And I think for sensitive information, providers need to realize that it might not be transmitted and that it's something that they have to elicit themselves.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, last I checked the Constitution, it doesn't say physicians have the right to know every information about their patient.
Thank you. This is helpful. So what we at ONC can do is we can proceed to include some additional implementation considerations based on this discussion, and we'll proceed to retain the recommendation in the draft transmittal for the proposal as included in the rule. Is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
I think that sums it up nicely.
Okay, thank you. Any other topics of discussion or questions on this topic?
I don't have anything.
Okay. Thank you. I think this is a nice segue then into the next agenda item. If we can advance the slide. Okay, so Carolyn and Chris, I will pass this back to you. This is really recapping the interaction and feedback from the high tech to date.
Okay, and I'll start with this one. So back a couple of weeks ago, although it seems like a lot longer since we've had so many meetings, I did a presentation with Chris on the phone, and we had some concerns from members about exactly what they were voting on and how all of this fit together. I think because there were so many materials, so many presentations, and because the NPRM itself is just huge, you know, 724 pages in text or 188 pages in the Federal Register, however you prefer to read it, people maybe weren't framing all of the issues and all of the topics that we're looking at in the way that they actually fit together. So to deal with that, we worked with ONC to create a different presentation with a crosswalk kind of a format that I gave yesterday. And in effect, each recommendation had its own slide, and there were four columns on the slide. In the far left column, it was the recommendation. In the far right column, it was what we as a task force had brought out in discussion, you know, some high-level bullet points about our thoughts, what we were recommending, and then information that showed which of the supplementals that went with which of the original 10. And in that way, we were able to connect the dots for people as I walked through the slides. You know, this is what was done before, so this is what we're considering. We vote to retain this, and here are some of the thoughts we were thinking about. Yesterday in the discussion, we did have a person say, so are these bullet points part of the recommendation? Is this just to think about, you know, advice for the future? And we were able to clarify that so that people understood better the structure of what we're looking at and what needs to go into the transmittal letter, and more about what they can expect to see when that comes through to them. People were also, at the 410 meeting, there was also some concern about functionalities and should be included in technology and referencing standards. And this gets back to this visual table, you know, showing how things fit together. There were some concerns about limiting certification requirements due to regulatory burden. That did not come up at all yesterday. People, I think, were already quite clear about the fact that these are the voluntary certification. It's not something that requires anyone to do anything. And there was no concern about redundant criteria or requirements. So it was really good to have that presentation and see new and different comments coming up and requests for clarifications about specific pediatric recommendations rather than sort of a lot of concern about the process as a whole. So that was really good to see. I felt like we definitely had a much, much better day at the races yesterday than we did 2 weeks ago. Can we go to the next slide? And then at the 410 meeting, there was some discussion around recommendation 8, that's associating the maternal health information and demographics with the newborn. We didn't really see these issues come up yesterday at all. So I read this feedback as some thoughts to give back to us as we had discussed these recommendations. But I don't, when I look at the slide, disagreement about no standard nomenclature available, where we can push out and allow the consumer to transfer, this stuff didn't come up at all yesterday. So I think with that further background and context, I think folks are pretty comfortable, folks on the high tech are pretty comfortable with what we're doing and where this goes. And did you have any follow-up, Chris or Sue?
No, I think that you that was pretty clear. Thank you.
Nope, thank you.
Okay. So let's go to the next slide. Some more. We did have a bit yesterday, a bit of discussion about four, but it was a request for clarification. We didn't hear anybody yesterday expressing that the recommendation could be a red flag, or any understanding that we were expecting vendors to be able to work with the state and local laws. That didn't come up as a consideration. So again, I think people understand where this sits in terms of our work overall. We did not get any feedback yesterday about how the work that we are doing fits with the US CDI. I think yesterday their meeting was a bit more like, their discussion was a bit more like ours was on 410, with a number of HITECH members bringing forward discussion about the naming of data elements and having a number of very specific questions about data elements. Didn't come up in our discussion at all. So I wouldn't say that this is a concern. I think perhaps in our recommendation we might want to frame the importance of this task force continuing to work with the US CDI task force so that we don't wind up with things that are radically different and potentially unimplementable because they're so different. But we didn't get as a concern yesterday that there is a significant difference or incompatibility between the work. Fire didn't come up at all yesterday, fire-based apps. So that may have been just a general comment someone made 2 weeks ago. But in general, it was a pretty smooth discussion. Yesterday, Aaron and I pulled together our notes and sent those out so you would have that for reference. But there were no really significant red flags for me in that. I know considerations except the concerns about DS4P that came up that differs much from what we've talked about. And then I think we have the next slide gets to the 425 feedback. Again, the task force recommends to retain the 10 ONC pediatric health IT recommendations for voluntary certification and to affirm the proposed rule, identified existing and proposed certification criteria. This is just kind of a recap of what we presented to them to let them know what we've been doing, and that was well received. The sense of the task force seems to be that we're doing the things that we should be doing. Is there any discussion about the comments that Aaron and I sent out yesterday after the meeting? I know they aren't placed in context within the discussion of the slides, which perhaps makes it a bit awkward, but we did try to capture the essence of each presenter's concern, each member's concern, and I'm happy to try to talk through that now if you'd like.
It sounds like you did a great job of representing the discussions of the group, so thank you very much, Carolyn.
Well, thank you. I think that the work that we are doing and the ideas that we have had to date really are not significantly different from the broad expectations and concerns of the HITECH. I think when you have an array of material and information in front of you, it's easy to kind of pick out points on subjects you're familiar with and ask questions, bring those things up. But that overall, I don't see broad disagreements. Except with this data segmentation, we need to think about bringing evidence to show why that's important. because there are at least a couple of people who have significant concerns about that.
Yeah, I think that's the, you know, you encounter that. If you deal with physicians as customers, you encounter this righteous indignation if you block something for potentially very good reasons. And I think that's the that's kind of the response you saw. Physicians are really good at that.
And it takes other physicians to push back.
That's right.
So I suppose, Chris, that brings us to a discussion about your availability on May 13, which will be, I think, the next date that we will be presenting to the full HITAC, and also a broader discussion for this task force about when we want to meet next to talk about the transmittal letter and be sure that we're all in agreement on the language that's in that, that it conveys the things we think are important, and for us to think about any ways that we want to frame our discussions or any additional evidence that we should locate ourselves or work with ONC to gather to support our positions when we bring that forward. Because at the next meeting on the 13th, we will have a set of slides as we have here, but we'll also be asking people to vote on the specific recommendations. And I know we also need to bring forward some kind of recommendations about the opioid use disorder questions. That's a request for information, but still ONC has asked us to do that in the recommendation form, which means we'll wind up seeking support of HITAC for that. You know, the next Friday that we would normally be scheduled to meet is the 3rd. So it may be quite a lot to get through in 90 minutes. So I was going to see if we could also have a conversation about scheduling an additional meeting and what might be a good date for that. I think given what I have heard so far about your calendars, Monday, May 6th, or Wednesday, May 8th at this time are probably the two most promising days. We probably really need to get the transmittal letter out to the HITAC committee by the end of the day, May 8th, Wednesday, May 8th at the absolute latest, so they have time to read it for the meeting.
So then why don't we do the 3rd and the 6th?
I mean, we could certainly meet on the 8th if that works better for you. We just have to be very, very diligent
and prepared. The 6th is better for me, but I don't know how anybody else responded.
I have to apologize, but, you know, I'm starting service on the 3rd for a week, and you know that I might as well be out of the country.
Do you anticipate...
Is there any appetite for doing this in the evening?
Personally, I'm
fine
with
that. I might be able to do it then during that week. If it's done after 5 p.m., I can do that.
That's fine with me as long as we can find a day that works for everyone. Yeah.
That would have to be the 6th for me.
And when we
Chris, can you do the 3rd, or you can't even do the 3rd, the Friday morning normal scheduled meeting?
No, I'm on rounds at that time, so I'm taking care of patients. So the afternoon when I'm on service, generally there's a good chance I can do it. Afternoon and evenings, there's a good chance I can do it. So the day doesn't matter to me because I clear my schedule when I'm on service otherwise.
And this is Lauren. So would it be okay to start at 5 p.m. Eastern? Because we typically don't have evening calls, but we could possibly start at 5 if that works.
Would that be Monday or on Friday the 3rd or what?
I can do as early as 3 p.m. Eastern on any of those days.
Just looking at my schedule on the 6th.
And
and Chip's not on this call, but I don't know if he responded to any of the requests when we talked about additional dates.
So I could do 5 Eastern on May 6th or Friday, May 3rd, if that is a time that works for you all. I know that's a Friday night.
Do we think we need both of those to, in order to get to what we need to by the 8th, or are you just talking about one because you said you thought there was a lot of material for 90 minutes?
I think we probably need to plan on 2 days and think that we might be able to wrap up early on the second one.
So I can do both of those. The only question is, I mean, 5 p.m. on a Friday night, I mean, it doesn't matter to me, but if somebody's got availability, Chris, you said you could even do it earlier, like 4 p.m. on Friday, depending on other people's availability.
Should we send out a poll to the rest of the task force and see?
Yeah,
what...
probably. But to me, I think that Friday and Monday make sense because that gives us time for you guys to, you know, finalize and write something that needs to be submitted.
Okay. I think that would certainly be better for ONC, but I know we also need to be respectful of people's time, and because you're seeing patients, you know, in my mind, that's kind of the first consideration.
Okay, so we can get a poll sent out to the members, and it sounds like we'll settle on sometime between 3 and 6.
Okay, that sounds wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, on Monday, I probably can't do it much before 5 myself, but on Friday, any time that works for the rest of the group is fine.
Okay.
And then in your comment before about what do we need to get together, I think any academic papers we have talking about patients not being honest and withholding information that they feel will be shared, and any of those barriers that we sort of alluded to sort of back up our push for DS4P segmentation, would be helpful if people have academic citations that we can at least point to.
Okay. I'll do a lit search on that and get that over to ONC so they can distribute it, and we can decide if there is anything else we need to add to it or any holes that would be helpful to fill.
Yeah, and I think there should be some literature on that. I recall a study from the 90s where 50% of OBs said they had never had a gay woman in their practice. So I think there should be plenty of data.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of just searching by the different reasons why people don't share information. I think you can probably pull 8 or 10 studies for different issues. It'd be hard.
I think that helps frame the conversation in especially physicians who are maybe not, they're being a little myopic in their view of what they think is important.
If it's helpful, we can also sort of map out, we can talk with Alex Contra, probably has some good ideas on this as well, the other types of use cases, because it isn't just that data segmentation would be segmented from provider to provider. Some of what the use cases that have been really important for pediatric care have been these other, you know, what about a patient who's emancipated and then unemancipated, and which parental unit are you data segmenting for, and those types of use cases that are extremely important and very nuanced in the legal perspective. So we can try and, you know, make a little flow of some of those as well to support it.
That would be really helpful. Thank you.
And we can follow up with Dr. Galvin, who I would anticipate would have some additional ideas for us.
Okay, that sounds good.
I did want to share the draft summary presented to HITECH on 425, the 3 bullets on the slide that's on the screen now. This was in large part also to be responsive to input we received on the 10th, which was providing clarity to the HITECH on what they would be voting for. And so this is structured in a way that we anticipate should align closely with the language they would be voting for. in the future, and also the language we would anticipate including in a transmittal. And so what you'll note is, you know, there are really these three bulleted items. And really to clarify on the last one, that focuses on OUD, as Carolyn indicated, that is a request for information in the rule. And so really we would be asking that they vote to affirm sharing of the information that we identified and discussed and sharing that to the national coordinator. So it's slightly nuanced, but I just wanted to offer that.
Okay.
So I have a question about... Go ahead.
No, sorry. Go ahead, Sue.
So the third bullet, the opioid use, it occurred to me while we were talking about where we're living in the IIS world and the gaps of interpreting standards differently across states, learning from that. Do we even venture in the world of trying to not replicate this same problem with PDMPs and try to look at harmonization and gather data and gaps on onboarding, et cetera, and use based on the ability for vendors to have to support multiple different iterations in multiple different states? Just a thought.
No, I appreciate that. I think that kind of thinking holistically across these opportunities and current state and future state, we can include additional implementation considerations where we were talking about PDMP with references and lessons learned as you identified, and we can update that as well and share that with the larger group in part of the future call with our task force. Does that address your comment, Sue?
Yes, thank you.
So just trying to think of anything else that came up yesterday. I think we've covered the feedback from HITACH. We know what we need to do going forward. We're getting together the recommendations, gathering some evidence to support and provide more background and more value around the DS4P so people have a better sense of the full issues, particularly some of the pediatric and legal side of things that I suspect the bulk of the task force committee is not as familiar with. We're going to do a poll in terms of when the task force can meet, looking at evenings on the 3rd and the 6th. I'm trying to think of what else you might need from me.
Afternoon and evenings.
And, Chris, this is Lauren. Do you have any... preferred block of time for the next HITACH meeting on the 13th?
There's nothing I can't cancel on that day.
Okay. Carolyn, I know I'm sure you'll be on the whole time, but do you prefer going kind of at the top of the call or early in the afternoon?
I kind of think that information blocking is going to require a lot of time and will take a lot of discussion. So maybe it's good for us to be sort of towards the end of the day because we've had three updates now, and other than the DS4P stuff that we can summarize, the additional in probably 5 minutes with three slides, I think we can get through our recommendations pretty quickly because we haven't, in terms of voting, because we haven't had any major significant feedback on the 10, and the supplementals go pretty close with those. We won't have a lot of recommendations for the opioid use. It's it's primarily just the DS4P, but even so, I think with evidence, we won't have a lot of pushback there either. So I would say start with info blocking and CMC, and after lunch or after the break, bring us on.
Okay, that worked. That helps for planning the agenda.
Because we don't want to wind up getting into a lot of small discussions about things that people ultimately are pretty comfortable with and then not have time for the info blocking.
Agree. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay. That's all I have. Sam, anything else? Sam, Beth, the ONC team?
No, I just want to thank you for helping to facilitate some of the process items as we near this next final stretch, and also for the great presentation yesterday, Carolyn, as well, to the larger HITECH, and for responding to the questions. I don't have further comment.
I have one quick question.
Sure, go ahead.
Do I have to block out any subsequent time after this third and sixth that you're going to need the whole group? Should I save time in any calendars for subsequent weeks?
Lauren or Cassandra, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah,
I think
the
answer is yes, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Sue, it really depends on how the meeting goes on the 13th. I think fingers crossed and assuming that we get all the recommendations approved, you should be able to keep your calendar clear. But if not, then we may need like one or two additional meetings before the end of May.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or input for anyone from ONC on any of the process or substance to date? Okay. Okay, thank you. Lauren, I think we can go to public comment.
Okay, sounds good. And operator, can we open the public line?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And do we have any comments in the queue?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay, we'll leave the number up. Any last remarks, and then we'll circle back to see if there's any public comments, just give them time to dial in. Co-chairs, ONC, anything else?
This is Sam. I want to thank Catherine for inserting under chat and public comment on the screen. There is the link to the materials from the HITECH meeting from yesterday, and those are obviously on our HITECH website as well. So Carolyn was describing the table, the presentation of the crosswalk. That content aligns with content that everyone has seen in slides and the technical pediatric worksheets to date. For access to that document in that format, please click on that link or contact us if you have any questions accessing any of the materials from yesterday.
Okay, thanks, Sam. And operator, any comments in the queue?
There are no comments at this time.
And you just gave us back 13 minutes in our day?
We did.
Thank you. I think we can adjourn. Thank you, everyone.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you.